Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
All right, we are once again going for a quick toy department this week. It's not going to happen, though. It's never.
I hate when you say it. I hate when we talk about it, and you know that saying it makes it not happen, and then you say it. I don't get it.
I don't believe in broadcaster jinx, but I guess broadcasters talking about broadcasts might be an exception to the broadcaster jinx rule.
This is not a jinx. We're like fundamentally in control, and you are like activating our subconscious to not do what it. What we wanted to do.
As we talk more and more about things that are not going to shorten the top runtime of this podcast, right. We do have a lot to cover this week, including we actually went to the movies, and there's a ton of TV to talk about. Let's start.
And frankly, I am as interested in your opinion on some of the things this week as I have been in a while.
Really? All right. Well, what would you like to start with then?
Well, maybe let's do a quick on the one thing where I already kind of know where you stand, because I think it's relevant. As I was watching the Deadwood movie, I thought to myself, man, this is really going to be a test of how good the content is, because this is not only a Western, which Madden is not only not that into, but it's a Western where it really is like two episodes to end the show. Like, it is not at all a standalone product. It 100% expects you to know what happened in the show, and really serves more than anything as like a loop closer for several of the storylines on the show.
Yeah, and that's sort of where I was at. I walked out of Deadwood, if you will, but it was not a John Wick situation for me. I was actually kind of enjoying it more than I thought I would.
And that to me is like, that is the best endorsement that Deadwood as an overall product could get.
Yeah.
Like someone who is not into Westerns, who even watched one or two episodes and wasn't totally into it, like just enjoying the content at a level where it's just an incredibly well-crafted, well-written, interesting charactered show. And I really think it's one of the best shows of all time. And I thought this was a nice ending. Like, would it have been better if this had just been two extra episodes when it went off the air that wrapped it up, perhaps, or an extra season would have been great at that time. But this is like going back and writing a wrong in my book.
Well, and unfortunately, I mean, I guess fortunately that we got this in time, but unfortunately, of course, David Milch, right, is experiencing dementia, right? So there's probably just not going to be any more. There's not any more opportunities for Deadwood, right?
Yeah, I think this is it. And it's really sad because he's really one of the great sort of writer creators we've seen.
Yep. I'm curious, I guess I should first say that, I enjoyed it. But the reason I bailed was just kind of like you said, I quickly realized there was a lot of references to things I hadn't watched and things I probably needed to watch and a lot of that sort of character arc closing. So I was like,
and they even did these like quick flashbacks that if you'd seen it would certainly remind you of what they were talking about, which I found useful as somebody without a great memory. But if you hadn't seen it, they'd be meaningless.
Yeah. So I decided I'll file that away for later. One of the other things I enjoyed, I think in the time since Deadwood, so many of these actors who are, very good television actors, obviously, went on to do other stuff, right? So there's a lot of just like,
Yeah,
I mean, obviously, totally. I knew Timothy Olyphant, Liam Shane, and that stuff, but there are a lot of supporting players that you find who have been on
the
other
favorite shows. The woman who plays Trixie, who, embarrassingly, whose name I don't know, has been in a lot of stuff we like.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that Skyler from Breaking Bad was on that show.
Uh-huh.
That was a revelation for me.
And
oh man, I feel bad.
Call her Ann something.
I don't think it's an Anne, to be honest.
Paula Malcolmson. Anna. Anna.
Yeah, Anna. You're right. I think it is Anna.
Not Anna Torv, but Anna.
If only there was a website where we could find out.
Anna Gunn.
Thank you.
I wonder if she's related to the Guns.
I don't know.
No.
No. Good for her.
Apparently.
I miss
apparently
her. Not. She needs to be in more things. What's she doing now?
Never loved her.
Oh, I thought Skylar was a really great character, and I thought Unnecessary took a lot of crap.
She has played people you're not totally supposed to like.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And I thought that performance in particular, because I think she really turned a character who could have easily been a hateable person into this person with real depth and emotion that you really got. So
no, you're right. She's good. I just I'm biased against her. Paula Malcolmson is the woman we're talking about.
Yeah.
Before that, she was in Hunger Games. Man, she was in Tombstone back in the day, and. She's the wife on Ray Donovan. I just really very much enjoy her work.
I am curious, a bit of a tangent here. Have you seen the Vulture list of every HBO show ranked?
I didn't look too deep into it.
I have some real problems. Some real problems with this list.
I saw it in the context of people tweeting how bad the list was.
I mean, let's start with The Wire at number three, for starters. Also,
so what's one and two?
Sopranos is Sopranos. Number one. I don't agree with that, but I will grant you that if you would if that is your feeling, that's at least a fair argument. And then Deadwood was two.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, The Wire is better than both of those, but I think they have the right top three. Actually, I think they have the right top four now that I look at it.
Would you have Game of Thrones at eight?
No, I would have Game of Thrones at five.
You can't have Sex in the City in front of Game of Thrones. Come on.
No, that's asinine. But the Larry Sanders Show is the right one to round out the top five in my mind.
I agree.
In some order, Sopranos, Deadwood, Wire, Larry Sanders, and Game of Thrones would be my top five HBO shows.
Yeah, a really putative ranking of Entourage on this thing. Now, I'm not here
really
to tell you Entourage is great television or anything. Entourage was 69.
Wow. They did that on purpose.
Out of 74 shows in the history of HBO.
Yeah, but you know what, though? Like, God, Vinyl's ahead of it.
Yeah, Vinyl's ahead of it. Ballers is ahead of it. Like, Ballers is just watered down Entourage. Like, come on. You know, like, I'm not saying it should have been in the top five or anything, but
it even says that.
That's really
low. The description of Ballers is basically NFL Entourage.
Yeah, like, I mean,
hey,
come on.
Here's NFL Entourage. Yeah, no, it's not better than Entourage. Also, man, Lucky Louie, which I loved. I wonder. Yeah, it's probably unwatchable now.
There's a lot of stuff. Like, you know, except they go Hung is way too high or In Treatment.
I actually liked Hung. Crashing, really.
John from Cincinnati's in the top 30. Like, just some inexplicable choices here. All right.
Yeah. Kids, though, you know?
Yeah, Google that article for yourself.
I'm looking at it. Oh, wow. Vice Principals 36th is rough, too.
Yeah, Eastbound and Down 22 I thought was low. Below The Comeback, which I like, but it's not as good as Eastbound and Down. Come on.
Wow. A lot of love for Big Love at number 30.
I like Big Love. So I'm okay. Anyway, it's a fun article to read because HBO has a lot of good shows, but they're very much in the wrong order.
God, Westworld is so high.
Yeah, exactly. See what I mean? Right. Okay.
Rome is so high.
Yeah.
Man, did anyone watch Rome?
I have one friend who really loved Rome. But she has weird TV taste and doesn't listen to this podcast, so I could say that.
I think we've talked about this before, but High Maintenance is a show we should probably check out.
Yeah. It also seems too high on this list, but it still seems good, and I really feel like I should.
My roommates have been watching it and love it.
Yeah.
And I don't mean my infant child. I like my adult roommate.
I mean, your infant child probably digs it. It's probably calming.
Yeah, he'd be into it. He's pretty easy to entertain at this point.
All right. Well, we will put that in the list maybe for 2 weeks from now because we got a lot of homework coming up later.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything else that you were curious about my opinion about Just get these out of the way. Hit me.
In the same way that I thought, man, here's a Western which Derek does not like, and you know, that also on top of that, he doesn't know who these people are, and he's supposed to. This will be a real test of how good this thing is. I had the same thought about Rocketman.
Yeah.
Here's a movie that is essentially half Bohemian Rhapsody, which we hated, and half La La Land, which we hated even more. And I loved it.
All right. So, yeah, you know, I have to say, so I put this up for homework because I want to see the Elton John movie. Was not aware when we did that, that it was a musical. And then I started reading about it a little bit, and I almost called you over the weekend to be like, can we bail on this? Because it's going to be a musical. But I didn't.
It's funny because I didn't read anything, but I probably would have been like, you know what? Yeah, it's going to be a tough thing for me to get to. But I have to say, I'm mostly with you on the musicals thing and definitely with you on the Bohemian Rhapsody thing. And I just thought this was great. I just loved it. And I think it all comes down to like positioning and what the movie seems to be intending.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about that because I'm in a different place than you. I look, the fact that it's a musical, it's mainly a musical. I didn't hate it. I think speaks to a lot of what you're talking about. Like I would, I don't regret watching this movie by any means. Like it's
I
not
feel
bad.
Like that's a win for Rocketman.
Yeah,
honestly,
I agree that is a win for Rocketman. But I would also say to me to do it in this style that they did, I think really obfuscates a lot about Reginald Dwight / Elton John, the person, in that everything is sort of so fantastical because it's a musical. It's really hard to know like what's real and what's true. Like the person I was with turned to me at some point and was like, did he really cancel a Madison Square Garden concert? And I was kind of like, who knows? Is anything really in this movie? Like, I'm pretty sure people didn't levitate at the Troubadour when, when he played there. And like,
sure, but you know, there is that picture of him with his legs in the air. And I'll say this. It is obviously fantastical. And this whole movie is just a big pile of metaphors.
Yeah, and like, myth-making. It's a lot of myth-making.
Or like myth, like maybe more myth like cementing, myth locking in. Because like, the myth already exists. That like, Elton John is the myth. Elton John is legend. And he's not a real person like you and me in any sense that we'll ever be able to understand. I mean, at some level he is. And I hope he has a nice life. But like, I think that was kind of part of the problem with Bohemian Rhapsody is, yes, here we're like, man, maybe none of this is real. In Bohemian Rhapsody, you're like, this all seems real, but no, it's not.
Yeah, I felt ultimately kind of the same way afterwards, which is like, I don't think that I really know either one of the subjects of these movies after spending 2 hours watching them, you know?
Yes, yes, but this one, I feel like I had fun and was able to enjoy myself and sort of let that go and just love Elton John's music and, you know, enjoy the slices of Elton John that Elton John was willing to give us. Because fundamentally, this is Elton John telling Elton John's story.
Absolutely. Look, and the other one was, you know, the Brian May and Roger Taylor telling Freddie Mercury's story. And I felt in the same way. These movies share a problem in that they're in a lot of ways. They're both almost songs before the story, and they both seem to really feel an obligation to play the hits, all of the hits. You know what I mean? Like, we're going to jam every hit into this movie. And so I felt like at times it sort of overran the story.
Sure. But I think in this one, that was sort of the stated intention in some ways. And they made, if not always successful, interesting choices about how to integrate the music into the story and about what to show and how to show it.
Yeah.
And I don't think it always worked, but it was more fun. It was experimental. And again, it just didn't have that sit down and let me tell you about this man feeling. It more had, here are a set of stories, or maybe they're allegories about Elton John.
Yeah. And I think allegories is a good way to put it. Allegories is a good way to put it. I do think, and this is sort of weird to me because I'm pretty, as I remember correctly, Bohemian Rhapsody got a Best Director nomination for Bryan Singer, right? I thought this was a much better directed movie than Bohemian Rhapsody was. Like, some of the visual flourishes were loud a little bit, but man, there were a lot of really cool ones in there. You know what I mean?
And like, this was. See, I thought it was, yes, loud, but it wasn't nearly as obnoxious as something like, say, Moulin Rouge, you know? It was loud,
There's never been a movie as obnoxious as Moulin Rouge, though.
Okay, like, fair, but you see my point.
That's the peak of that scale.
This was loud in a way that felt very authentic to Elton John and that I found immensely entertaining.
Cool. Fuck you, Baz Luhrmann. Just want to get that out there.
Agreed.
I agree. And it was much more watchable than I felt like it maybe necessarily had a right to be.
Yeah. How'd you feel about Taron Egerton? Egerton?
It was not Rami Malek in terms of performance, but I thought did a pretty good job, all things considered. It's not an easy role.
Funny you say that, because obviously, look, it's hard not to compare this to Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
But the way I would compare those two performances is he didn't do nearly as good of an impression of Elton John, but I found him to be much more like charming and enjoyable.
Did he do his own singing?
Yes.
Yeah. See, points for that.
And he wasn't Elton John, but he was pretty damn good.
Yeah. Yeah. The singing was all pretty good, I thought.
Yeah.
I do suspect, not that obviously Bernie Taupin isn't a massively important figure. And I can't say I know a lot about their real relationship, but I do feel like some of that was maybe played up a little bit. It's hard to imagine that the lyricist was out on the road with him all the time. That seems pretty unnecessary.
They had such a unique and special lyricist-songwriter relationship. Yeah. Probably them and Paul and John are arguably the two greatest sort of songwriting tandems of all time.
I'd love to see a movie about what Bernie did all day while Elton John was on tour.
I think you got a hint of what he did all day, if you know what I mean. I'll say this, you know who feels even better about his life than Elton John after watching this movie?
Bernie Taupin.
Bernie fucking Taupin, man. He really killed it. He was like the moral center for Elton. He was like
the one true friend
in the 70s, like a songwriting genius who somehow, and I've heard a few people comment on this, so it's not an original idea, but sitting and listening as a captive audience to all those songs and thinking about Bernie Taupin's contributions to them, it's remarkable the sort of like kind of deeply poetic weirdness that he sold to a pop audience lyrically.
Yeah. 100%.
What great songs, man. And I don't think piano ballads are like the bread and butter for either of us, but like just the song craft of the great, you know, Bernie Taupin, Elton John stuff is unparalleled.
Yeah. I was just looking up other people that Bernie has worked with, and I have found out that he wrote We Built This City.
Hilarious.
Which is amazing. And also These Dreams by Heart. So there you go. It seemed like Elton was pretty hurt when he was talking about
neither of them were at their best without the other, right?
Yeah, I guess that's fair to say. I had a good time with this. It's a good rock and roll movie. If I could pitch one more personal bitch, though, this is solely related to me and not the film. I'd like to see maybe one movie about musicians where like the people who work in the business are not like flat out the villains, you know?
Yeah.
Like, can there be like one good manager who actually like cares about the band, or one good record company executive or something? Like,
yeah, man. As the grandson of a record executive who works in radio, I feel your pain.
Yeah. Like, we're not all jerks, man. Like, some of us actually care, you know?
You know what, though? Like,
we're trying to help, really.
I hate to say it, but, like, the story, almost every story of every great band or musician include some dickbag gatekeepers trying to stand in their way.
Right, you need a foil, right? I get
real,
that.
Real though is what I'm saying. Like, there really was some idiot who tried to stop most great bands from happening.
Right, but I would say likewise, there's probably a few industry people who really helped that band along the way.
No, of
you
course,
know what
but
I mean?
Why would you want to share credit?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Right, you're always getting it from the artist's perspective, right? So
of course,
it's like, yeah, you know. And then the movies about radio are like Airheads.
Great film, though. Fantastic film. Do not disparage Airheads.
All right. That's fair.
Like, the acting friggin' superpower, the regular nuclear generator of acting star power in the movie Airheads is not to be ignored.
Not to be dismissed. Well, you know, I've come around on late period Brendan Fraser for sure. So,
What are you talking about? Early period Brendan Fraser is obviously just as good. School Ties, Airheads, Encino Man. Like, what are you upset about?
Encino Man. I'm upset about Encino Man.
Stop that. You stop that right now.
Are you going to throw George of the Jungle at me any second now?
I'm not going to, but let me just give you some names. Fraser, Buscemi, Sandler, Farley, Ernie Hudson, Michael McKean, Judd Nelson, Michael Richards, and Joe Mantegna. The star-studded class of the $11.2 million budget, $5.8 million box office grossing domestic Airheads. It made more than half its money back. You bite your tongue.
That's right. That's right. I stand corrected. Can we talk about something that I hated now?
Yeah.
Good Omens.
Yeah.
This is just not my shit. It's just not.
It's really not.
I just found it all silly. I'm not interested in the subject matter.
Well, and it is silly, right? It's cute, silly, like apocalyptic, dark humor.
Yeah, but it's too clever by half. You know what I mean? It's just not. It's not as funny as he thought it was. You know what I mean?
I would tend to agree, and I'm a little disappointed. I didn't hate it. I might even watch it. It's not that many episodes. It is cute at times. David Tennant is funny. Michael Sheen, right, is funny. But it's fundamentally, I agree with you. This is a pitch. This is a pitch meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, I could like come to life, you know.
Right.
And it sounds like, better listen, as a pitch when you're like, hey, we got Frances McDormand to play God and Nick Offerman's going to show up and Michael Sheen is a good angel and
exactly. Like, yeah. Check it. We got all these fun actors. They're going to really be having a good time. It's going to be jokey times about the apocalypse and we'll make some fun references to the real world, but also have a totally fantastical story about the Antichrist. What do you think? And a bunch of executives are like, you've got Michael Sheen and David Tennant and Frances McDormand attached. Let's do it. John Hamm. Okay.
Yeah. I forgot about Hamm. My God. Yeah. It's like, take my Bezos money.
Right. And then they show up on set and someone's like, all right, so who wrote the script?
Right. That's it. Exactly. And then it's like, we got to say this. Oh, crap.
All right. Yeah, and I think I am less put off by just the very nature of the sort of sci-fi fantasy elements. And so I get a little more mileage out of the pitch meeting, frankly.
Yeah.
Like, I enjoy John Hamm and Michael Sheen and David Tennant and what they're doing enough to be like, all right. But it's not fleshed out.
Not fleshed out is a good way to put it. Particularly for a story that starts with an Adam and Eve reference. So,
yeah, and it like you know, the previews made it seem like an epic. You know, I don't think it was a coincidence. It premiered shortly after the end of Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
and like that was how it was billed, and it's just not. Like, it's closer to Dogma, the Kevin Smith film.
Yeah, that is a great point. That is it has sort of that feeling, but I think
it's not like Dogma in my mind works because Kevin Smith goes full hog into the absurdity and like that the point of it is the absurdity. And here this is just kind of lightly absurd.
Yeah. Lightly absurd. Yeah. So that's your thing. Good luck to you, but I'm out. I'm out on this one.
Yeah, that one does not surprise me, and frankly, I can't blame you. I'm also interested, though. Man, the last two things, really, I'm very interested to see. Oh, we got a few, but I know how you feel about Killing Eve, I think. We'll get to that.
I'm interested, and so this may be a crossover. This is going to be the one we're both interested in each other's opinion and what your take
on
how to sell drugs online was. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to answer your first question before you even ask it, which is no, I did not know.
That it was German? Is that the question you were anticipating?
Yeah. It's dubbed.
Yeah, it's dubbed. And I know this is a provincial point of view, but man, I did find it to be pretty damn distracting.
Yes. And here's the other thing. And this provincial may not be the right word, xenophobic or like, I don't know. I'm looking for an even nastier word than that for myself. It's also just all due respect. You get beyond like the US and England and stuff becomes B movie real fast.
Well,
and like, this is not a terrible show.
It's it's watchable.
I think I
watched four of them, but yeah, it's very much a B show.
Everything, there's nothing being done here at an A level besides maybe like the conceit of it in the first place.
I feel like it's like they watched The End of the World and we're like, let's make a German version of this. You know what I mean? And it just comes out less interesting.
Yeah, it's like they watched End of the Fucking World and Bad Education and like Little Miss Sunshine and, you know, a couple other American indies. And they were like, if we could synthesize all that into a high school show, I think we've got something. And yeah. I think, again, at the risk of sounding like a xenophobic prick, by German standards, they probably do have something, or it wouldn't be on Netflix.
I suppose. Did you find the meta Netflix references, though, to be a little crass?
Yes. I found the whole thing to be pretty crass.
Yeah. I did, too. And yet, like I said, I watched four of them, so it wasn't like...
Right. It's not bad. And like you said, it's pretty watchable, and it's short. You know? I think it's so... There's a level at which, and when I say we here, I don't just mean the two of us. There's a level at which we're so relieved to have something 30 minutes or shorter that it's just a breeze to watch almost anything at that length.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. More 30-minute shows, content creators, please.
Yeah, and it feels digestible. Like, and I'm feeling this even more with the baby, like... I feel like I can buy 20 or 30 minutes of focus here or there. An hour is tough, man.
Yeah. Yeah, and stringing a few hours together to watch a few of those things, it's a precious commodity in our world. So, the more short, good short things, great. But I feel like this is 100% an innings eater for Netflix. You know what I mean? Which is why they dubbed it into English, because they're just like, hey – here's one more offering if you like racy teen drama, you know?
Yep. And I think that's a perfect transition to Always Be My Maybe.
Yeah.
Now, well, let me, before we do this, what is your, like, put this movie or any movie aside for a second. I'm like just a random dude on the street and I walk up to you and I'm like, hi, I'm doing a survey for entertainment television. How do you feel about rom-coms?
I'm pro rom-com in general. Okay.
Are you a guy who will throw on a mediocre rom-com just because?
No,
you want something
on TV? Like a good rom-com.
Okay,
I like a good rom-com. I definitely have like a soft sentimental side that a good rom-com will tickle. You know what I mean? As we've discussed a few times now in this podcast, especially now that I get overly emotional watching movies,
right?
Even bad rom-coms will tickle that for me. But you know, the genre got overstuffed with cliche at some point for me. And when that happens, you know, like some of the Jennifer Lopez, a lot of like, you know, your lesser Kate Hudson rom-coms.
Right, I
got no time for that. You know what
That's
I mean?
That's fair. I'm probably with you on that. But I am a pretty pro rom-com guy in general. And like, this is undeniably a by the book romantic comedy film.
Oh yeah.
It is the algorithm. It's a combination of the algorithm and Ali Wong being like, I want to be in a romantic comedy with Randall Park. And then that movie got made. And it is, frankly, just not as good or interesting or creative or original as some of the other Netflix rom-coms we've watched.
All right. So I want to add one more thing, because there's another thing that if you pause me on the street and said, how do you feel about movies set in San Francisco? I'd be like, all in, 100%. I have a penchant for watching things that are terrible, just to watch the scenery.
It's beautiful.
Yeah,
it's a wonderfully shot movie. And I heard someone else, I think it was Sean Fennessy of The Ringer, say this. It feels very much like a sitcom. Like there's these sort of B-roll shots of the city, bridging scenes together.
Yeah, there is some of that. There are definitely also some outdoor shots of places you will know. You know what I mean?
Scenes in favorite spots for sure.
Yeah, and I also love playing the game of
how they drive around the city. And
yeah, like you can't get there from there in any link. You know, that takes a terrible. You know,
right. Well, the thing is, you can't get anywhere from anywhere in San Francisco with any ease.
Right,
and that is not something that movies want to portray.
Yeah, or like when they mess up the parking, you know, it's like the parking's like super easy or whatever, and like I'm like, oh my god. Speaking of, this will give you an idea in terms of rom-coms plus the San Francisco factor. Do you remember the Josh Hartnett movie 40 Days and 40? Love that movie. I would not tell you it's good, but I watched that movie 10 times out of 10.
That woman in that movie is like one of the actresses who like isn't in much. I can never remember her name, and I just like take my money.
Yeah,
if she's in something, just
Shannon Sossaman, I think is her name. If I'm remembering that correctly.
I mean, if
that
is
that was not an IMDb lookup. That is me coming off the top.
You got it. You nailed it.
Shannon with a Y. Ooh, look at that. I did.
And she's in some of my favorite like weird, not that seen movies like this one. She's in Rules of Attraction, she's in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and she's just like a little weird, man, but I effing love her.
Yeah, I do too. She's great. And I agree with you, just a little bit weird. So and then the other thing, I feel like that this is just well made for me, you know, given where we are coming from, and I really should say this is a spoiler, because I think that no one is really talking about this, and if you're coming in cold, you shouldn't know. So if you're planning on watching Always Be My Maybe, maybe you want to drop out for this.
Yeah.
But as someone who hated John Wick 3 as I did, I really, really enjoyed the Keanu role in this. Like, I thought it was just a perfect thing out of nowhere, and the way that they made him and the whole like I punched Keanu Reeves joke, like I loved all
Amazing.
Of it. Yeah, so I'm much higher, I think, on this movie all in all than you are, but
I don't know that you are.
It may not be because it's good. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I was honestly genuinely surprised at Ali Wong as a romantic lead.
She was good.
I didn't know if she could act at all, and I'm not gonna say that she was great, but I think she's good enough to carry a rom-com for sure. Like she worked for me.
Frankly, I'm not sure Randall Park is great, but he does one thing very well.
Yes, he does. Like,
this character is, I think, if you like, we're doing some human analysis, this character is bizarrely similar to a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent in the world of Ant-Man.
Okay.
But like, why does this guy have the same? I don't know. And no shade to Randall Park, because this is his thing and he's killing it. I think he nails this, but he's very specific, and they both are. I don't think we're in a different place on this movie at all. I just wanted to bring up the like real world flaws before I say I also loved it.
Okay,
because that was my point in asking about rom-coms. Is like, this made me think a little bit. It's not quite as clever, but one of my favorite movies of all time is called Keeping the Faith.
Oh, with the is that the like Ed Norton Keeping the Faith?
Ed Norton, Ben Stiller.
Yeah. That's one of your favorite movies of all time.
I mean, I'm not saying it's the best. I'm saying it's one of the ones I enjoy the most and can rewatch the most.
Wow.
Jenna Elfman is the female lead.
That's what I was looking for. Yep.
It's not super surprising. It's not. It very much is from the How to Write a Romantic Comedy for Dummies book, but like, it's just enjoyable. And I liked it. I have no complaints about my experience watching it. Yeah. I recognize it is far from a perfect film, but I have zero complaints about the time I spent watching it.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about movies like
this. This is not going to be on our list at the end of the year of anything.
No.
But I had a great time. I had a great time.
Exactly. I could see myself watching this movie 10 times in the next 5 years just because why not?
Yeah. Yep. I probably will watch it again. I definitely will recommend it to other people, particularly people who really like Keanu. So,
oh my God. And he just, what a career. Like, what else to say about Keanu Reeves? What a career.
It is true.
He's fantastic in this. He's so funny. And especially like given his reputation as a guy, which is like a sweet, thoughtful man. Who's very concerned with everyone feeling comfortable and happy, is like, it's such a funny version of him. It's yep. So funny.
Agreed.
He clearly the best like 10 or 15 minutes of the movie.
You know, really great and self-aware and just, oh yeah, I loved it. so, and the dad, by the way, was also great. There was a lot to like about this movie.
Yes, it was very
charming
and enjoyable and fun to watch.
Yeah, and you know what? I know this is also innings eater stuff for Netflix and algorithm stuff, but bring it to me. I'm good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, like, as long as you can keep it around this level. Like, I don't want to slide too much further down the hill than this.
Yeah.
But if you can keep it at this level, like, give me one a week, man. I can put this on in the background anytime.
Yes. You know, sometimes you need something that you can clean the house to. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Totally.
When, you know,
totally.
Once a year when I clean the house.
That is not a description of the last show we're going to talk about, which was the first thing we watched, and we're way late on this. But
yeah, let's talk Killing Eve. I may need a minute to like come back in to
well,
Killing
let's
Eve.
Start with the big thing, and spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't finished the season, although at this point, what have you been doing with your time? They killed Eve. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't think they did.
No, I don't think they did either, but... That was a turn. Did you see that coming?
I did not. No. They set that up well.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, I'm not going to say that, I wanted to say it was one of the few things they did well. But can we agree at this point that season two was not a step forward?
No.
For
it was a step back. Undeniably. It does. Especially watching Fleabag. As we did, it really does give you an appreciation for the specific talents of Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah, I really feel like that show coming out right after this was a disservice to Killing Eve.
It was a bad look for Killing Eve,
yeah.
No question about it, man. It wasn't the same show. It didn't have the same energy. It didn't have me on the edge of my seat nearly the same way. Like, just the fact that I hadn't watched it by... 3 days after it aired, the season finale, and I think even more so than at the end of last year, we're stuck now with what is this show?
Yeah, because I think it feels as though this show may have to twist itself in knots to sort of continuing to revolve around the relationship between these two, and you know, sort of keeping them in the same orbit. Having them work together, I didn't love that choice, you know?
You know what? It made a lot of sense from a fan service, won't this be fun standpoint, but it either wasn't well enough thought out or, yeah, it just wasn't going to work and they should have thought harder. I would agree with that. Here's the other thing.
The other thing is, like, I mean, you, right, the show has made it obvious that these two characters have some romantic feelings for each other that are at times fully expressed and at times unresolved and whatever, but shouldn't that be enough to just keep them in each other's orbit? It feels like an extra contrivance, you know what I mean?
It did. And this leads me to my awkward analogy. I feel like the first season of Killing Eve is Ocean's 11, that just happens to be a woman's story. Season 2 is Ocean's 8, where it's like, how are we going to get these women to do cool woman stuff together?
Yeah.
And there was too much thought about that part and not enough thought about let's actually plot and write as creative and interesting a show as season 1. Now, I still get a lot of mileage out of just watching Jodie Comer and Sandra Oh. So, and I think I would imagine you agree.
I do.
This is not to say I'm done with Killing Eve or this is no fun anymore, but it's definitely not. Season 2 was not what season 1 was.
No. I mean, I think it's fair to say both of us were much more excited about this season at the beginning of it than we were by the end.
For sure.
Yeah. And I also, it still has an issue, and this is, to me, it's still a season one issue, that to me is you know, it's sort of that Orphan Black problem of like the 12 and the vast conspiracy, is only going to just continue to get messier and kind of more hard to follow and explain.
Well, and just, it didn't, what did we really get about the 12 this entire season?
Right.
What has changed? Like. Yeah.
And everyone is sort of and kind of working for it, and it comes up every once in a while, and sometimes they need to hunt them down. Somebody from the 12 needs to, you know, hunt Villanelle down, but then nothing really happens to Villanelle when that happens.
Right, and it feels the whole issue of the 12, which seemed to be setting up as, like, the key storyline, feels so distant to everything that's actually happening now.
Yeah, right, because they made the love story sort of the key storyline.
And it's settled in a way that, like, oh, we could just do this for years. We'll just have them pursue a new serial killer each year. It just feels like this wasn't supposed to be like a procedural in any way.
Yeah. So look, there, you know, the plan, right, is to bring a new showrunner in every year, and who knows, maybe season 3 will take a totally different tact. The show is getting more and more successful as we go. So, which is not an incentive for them to course correct, but I'm hoping that creatively that they'll decide to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe the answer is bringing in a sort of auteur level showrunner who really does make some significant changes to how it's being done, because I think somebody else trying to be Phoebe Waller-Bridge clearly is not the answer.
Yep. And we will, I don't know if the season 3 showrunner has been selected or announced, I should say. I'm sure they know who's doing it internally within the show, but I'm hoping that we'll get somebody great.
Yeah.
Because I do love the show, and I in general, and I'm still hopeful that we can get somewhere great, but I was discouraged by what we saw this year.
Yeah. I mean, I think that sounds harsher than I feel about it, but I basically agree.
Yeah. All right. I think that covers most of what we were talking about this week. Can I pitch a quick bitch? It has nothing to do with you, but.
Well, yes. I just quickly want to say, I considered maybe we should do some final stuff, but like, it's just, we're right in the middle of it and there's a game in a few hours and I just don't.
Yeah. That was my bitch.
When it's over.
When last we did this show, we talked about game one, an entire week has gone by and there's one game. There's one game in between that. And I know there's a game tonight. That seems insane to me.
Well, there were two games Thursday and Sunday, but yeah, it's very slow. More importantly, like,
no, there's been two games in the whole series, right?
Yeah, but we were pre-game one when we talked. But that's beside the point. The point is, right now we're just in a spot where so much is going to be determined by who plays, and we just don't know. So I'm not sure there's much point in us getting too deep into it.
Yeah. Although I think Steve Kerr's been really great.
Phenomenal.
Adjusting on the fly, really through these whole playoffs. And I do hope long-term, obviously, you know, we're sort of Warrior-centric in our perspective here a little bit, but that we've at least now undone a lot of the narratives that sort of existed about the playoff Warriors, but, you know, about them being lucky or not facing people or... I don't know. Steph being soft or not a good player. The fact that there was a narrative out there about Steph not being a good playoff performer tells you how dumb NBA narratives can be.
Yeah,
from time to time.
You know, one of my radio partners, Ray Ratto, is fond of talking about how everyone's a prisoner of the moment these days, and it's just everything is so based on the last thing I saw is the uncontrovertible truth, and it's just not that.
So. Yeah, my favorite, and I tweeted about this at some point, is just the people yo-yoing about the Warriors are better without Durant, or the Warriors can't win without Durant. Like both of those things are just as dumb. You know what I mean? Like, of course the Warriors are better with Kevin Durant. Of course they can win games without him. Like, there's more than enough evidence to the fact. And so there are people right now, you know, saying, I don't know, the Warriors can't win if Durant comes back, if it doesn't come back. And it's like, no, they're 1-1 without him right now, and something like 39 out of the last 41 without him. So
now, if you think they're going to struggle to win the series if both Clay and Durant are out, then maybe we have a conversation.
Yeah, maybe. And look, I think they're going to struggle without Durant is one thing. Saying they can't win, which is a thing people say, it's just dumb. Right. You're just trying to be, you're just trying to hot take. You know what I mean?
We can't, because we're not, much like nice things, we're not allowed to have nuance in 2019.
Right. I have to say something definitively, especially if I'm Stephen A, because I'm going to yell it later. So
yeah.
By the way, this whole people are coming around on Stephen A thing is, that's not cool either. We gotta stop that.
You know what it is? I really think it's very simple. By comparison, he seems reasonable.
There is some of that.
It's funny, but I'm not kidding.
There is some of that. It's like, you know, Skip went to Fox, and then they spawned all these like little mini Clay Travises or whatever, saying dumb stuff. Where it's
Clay Travis, Nick Wright, Will Kane. You got all these guys going so hard at stuff they know is stupid and wrong. Colin Cowherd, all these dudes lean heavy into stuff they know is false. They do. They just do. Skip Bayless. And Stephen A, while often loud wrong, I think is pretty sincere. And
mostly. Except when he does that, challenging things.
That's
you know
dumb.
What I mean? But, I'm going to need to see more from you, Kyle Lowry. What?
Yeah.
Or what are you going to do?
Bringing Magic on and allowing him to basically lie and defend himself.
And just trash that reporter when the dude wouldn't even comment in the story.
From your own company, who you know, and Stephen A. knows Baxter Holmes did the reporting on that properly. So, that stuff sucks. But also, he's, reasonably consistent and believes most of what he says, in my mind. So, I really do think he has gone from the extreme to the relative center.
Yeah. And he's not winning me over. I'll tell you that much.
I mean, I'm not a huge fan, but he's obviously good at what he does.
Well, look, there's certainly a market for his services. that cannot be denied.
I mean, I think fundamentally that's what makes both of us frustrated is how big the market for those services, not just him, but really more guys like Nick Wright and Skip Bayless. Except I don't know how large the audience is because none of those shows are getting watched besides Stephen A.
Yeah.
So I honestly just think that a bunch of misguided TV executives have ruined the sports media for no reason. I honestly think people would be just as interested, if not more interested, in legitimate sourced reporting with responsible commentary.
It's weird because it seemed like there was a time when there was really the rise of the Woges and the Shams and the Schefters and those guys who are actual reporters talking to actual people breaking actual news.
Well, I think part of the problem is TV stations confuse like a 15-minute social media kerfuffle with actual popularity. Like Skip Bayless, Nick Wright say dumb things and they make huge waves on Twitter. But I don't think it, but nobody's watching the show.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know, but look, I'm
but these guys are all innings eaters too. I mean, like one of the strengths of Stephen A. and Cowherd especially, I think, is at Solo, right? They're cranking out all this content. They do several hours of TV and radio a day, and it fills a lot of space and generates clicks, and you know, obviously there's real value to that for somebody. So, all right, should we get to homework?
Yes. Well, we should start with we're at what? What would you say? 55% chance of having a show next week?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. So I am traveling on Wednesday when we tape the show next week. So if I can sort of carve a little time out of my schedule, then we'll pod, and if not, we won't. So you know, this homework may be for 2 weeks. If you don't get a show from us next week, don't be totally surprised. But we like doing it for you guys, so we're going to try to. That said, I think a lot of the homework is stuff you might want to just be watching anyway, right? Like we don't
True story.
Do we need to remind you that there's a new season of Black Mirror and that it's awesome probably and you should watch it? No. Right. And I feel the same about Big Little Lies. Like a lot of people are going to watch that whether we do it or not. But
yep.
So those are two things we're going to cover, and then the AMC series Nosferatu, which I don't know if we mentioned that last week. We certainly talked about it
on the pod.
In our pre-show meeting, this is a modern-day vampire series that premiered last week, so we're going to try to jump into that as well.
Yep, and the end of Billions as well, so we may mix in a little bit of that.
Yeah, I do feel like that show's worth a revisit now that we've gotten to the end of the season, for sure.
Yeah.
So we'll do all that and then call it a day.
All right, well, let's call this a day. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.